What's going on, beautiful people? Welcome in on this Tuesday to 104.5 The Zone. So happy to have you guys along for the ride. Happy to be back in Nashville, even though the weather sucks. What the hell? I thought all the rain was supposed to be in Seattle. Regardless, hitched a red eye back last night, feeling great, good energy. It's lovely to see Lucas in person. It feels like it's been, a whole week. I'm sure he's, I'm sure he's been glad for the distance, but it's good to have the crew back together again. We welcome your participation as always, because you're a part of this crew too. 615-737-1045 is how you get involved. 615-737-1045. Lots to discuss. Luke Worsham of A to Z Sports going to be here to talk about some Derrick Henry stuff and the Titans win on Sunday in Seattle. We had full reaction yesterday. I thought we had one of our better shows. And I want to get into some of the, you know, we talked about the win, we talked about all the excitement, but then there's stuff to legitimately analyze and kind of break down and question why they were down 24-9 in the first place and how they can avoid those kind of situations that they've become a bit famous for. So Luke Worsham will be in here at 11:20. We will also have our buddy Mike Wilson of the Knoxville News Sentinel, because we have not talked yet about what we learned from the University of Tennessee in a, overwhelming win against Tennessee Tech, which was thoroughly outmanned, outgunned, overmatched. It was a tough scene, but I have some legitimate observations, as many as you can have from a 56-0 performance by the Vols at Neyland Stadium this past Saturday. But I want to start with Monday Night Football, because I flew Delta home, direct flight, about 4 hours, 4 minutes, and they had Monday Night Football on. And I was watching the Packers and the Lions. I keep wanting to say Rams because Jared Goff's the quarterback, and it still makes me feel weird. The defense for the Packers was so porous last night that even though it was 35-17, and even though the final result was not something that you would say that Green Bay was ever in danger of going down 0-2, Jared Goff, man, I am so curious to see how the other side of the NFL plays out. Because, of course, the AFC. I mean, look at the AFC. We're going to spend some more time on Carson Wentz this week because he may not play against the Tennessee Titans on Sunday. It very well might be Jacob Eason, because it's not one ankle that he's dealing with, it's two. You talk about the rest of the quarterbacks in the AFC over the weekend. I had time to watch a bunch of these games on Game Pass yesterday, last night on the flight home. And there was so many injuries across the board. Trevor Lawrence got banged up. I saw reports that from Tom Pelissero of the NFL Network, it's possible Tyrod Taylor might go to IR dealing with hamstring issues.
Well, Ian Rappaport reported on Sunday that he will actually be out on Thursday. Texans are saying day-to-day.
Yeah, it's a bad situation right now just in this division, first and foremost. Trevor Lawrence got knocked around again. My God, did you see? I saw the quote from Urban Meyer because he was asked if he got out-coached, and he already looks disheveled. He's down 0-2. I'm almost to the point, I don't know that I ever will have a feeling of pity for Urban Meyer because of the track record, but I looked at him on SportsCenter on Sunday, because of course they're running his highlights on the late-night SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt, and he just looks totally out of it. He's like not shaven in a couple of days. He's damp looking in the press conference because Jacksonville just appears to be covered in some kind of perpetual film. And
only going to get worse.
Only going to get worse. Trevor Lawrence is getting battered back there. They can't run the football to take pressure off the rookie quarterback. And Urban Meyer is asked, hey, did you get out coached? And he kind of looked at the reporter that asked him that. It's like, you know, I've never been asked that question before. Welcome to the pros, Herb.
By the way, they play the Cardinals and Kyler Murray on Sunday.
Buddy, what is happening with Kyler Murray? I still think Cliff Kingsbury stinks as a head coach, because I think they're just, in as many different ways as we're told in the NFL that they don't just roll the ball out there for guys, man, it sure as hell seems like that was an incredible finish between the Cardinals and the Vikings on Sunday, and we'll get to winners and losers of the sports weekend as well later in today's show because I or of the football weekend rather because Minnesota, my God, your boy Greg Joseph, what happened? What happened to what's Mickey Ryan's favorite Greg Joseph line? Talks about asserting his dominance.
Oh, right.
Something like that. Because he had that. Because former Titans kicker.
He did one, say that, didn't
one
he?
One of 75. Yeah, when he was here for the Titans for like a hot second. Didn't attempt a single field goal in the regular season. He gets a try in the playoffs against the Chiefs, and he misses it. No, he made that try.
You put some respect on Greg Joseph's name.
I refuse because of the way that he choked on Sunday against Arizona, man.
He nailed a 53-yarder in that game, as he did in week one, but the reason they were down one there late and had to set him up for a 30-something-yard field goal is because he missed an extra point, and then he missed the field goal at the end.
God, so just know that it's not just your kicker situation that is a nightmare across the NFL. So many kickers just causing people perpetual strife.
Not the Cowboys.
And angst. Look at Greg the Leg. What a rebound. The Cowboys always lose that game. Always lose that game. It was a fascinating. This is why I don't know how to process week one, right? Because the famous line is that week one in the NFL, it's a lie. The Tennessee Titans, for example, looked like the worst team in football. Well, maybe not worse than the Jags. But one of the worst teams in football against Arizona. Arizona is still making tremendous plays out there. Against Minnesota, it's a lot like they looked a lot worse. And the Titans in the first half of their game against Seattle, which we'll spend more time dissecting later on in the show. I want to spend a lot of time on college football today, though, because I feel like it was a really impactful weekend, particularly in the SEC game that we saw, the rematch of the SEC championship game last year that we'll talk about coming up next.
But Saints-Packers is also a good example of that from week one.
Jameis.
Yeah.
The LASIK didn't do it.
Right back. Right back to the Jameis we love.
I was told... Our buddy Trevor Sikkema, who now I believe is at Pro Football Focus, he had a great clip because he's a Bucs fan, so he loves Jameis. Loves him no matter what kind of suffering. And Bucs fans and Florida State fans love Jameis despite how poorly he plays on the field. But he had a play where he's getting hit. He's falling away. He just launches the ball up in the end zone. And I saw Trevor Sikkema break it down like this is one of those bleep it, Mike's down there somewhere. We're talking about Mike Evans throws that he's seen so many times with the Bucs. Jameis, the rumors of his return to glory because of LASIK surgery in the offseason. What a fantastic line from his agent and his representation when he was out there in free agency. Yeah, he's had LASIK surgery. You ready, rock?
Jameis throwing a million touchdowns and a million interceptions in the same season is just good for football.
It is an unbelievable time-honored tradition. He's going to kill you if he plays for your team. But to watch him as an objective, just like fan of football, my God, it's glorious. I'm so happy. That we got reckless abandonment, Jameis Winston.
It looked like his eyes were closed on that one throw you were just talking about.
He's been playing like that for 6 years. He squints. That's what the LASIK was for. 615-737-1045. Spencer in the Zone TV chat on YouTube, where you can interact with us on YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, and Facebook Live. You want to basically hang out in studio with us. Spencer says, CFB talk, Matt Corral for Heisman. I can't say more about Ole Miss's offense. How are they better?
Yeah, Spencer might have taken my main takeaway through the first 3 weeks of the college football season.
Well, and let's talk about that coming up next, because this has been an interesting 3 weeks of college football. I never know when to talk about college football, though, outside of Fridays during the course of a week reaction, because Mondays are about the NFL, right? This is why the NFL is so smart with their business model. They're just going to dominate all elements and take the oxygen away from any other sport that would try and muscle in. But in college football this weekend, I mean, Saturday, there were so many impactful games for the rest of what the season would look like. And I want to know from the audience, 615-737-1045 is the number. 615-737-1045. What's been the biggest surprise of the first 3 weeks of college football? Week zero, week one, and now into week two. The first 3 weeks of college football, what's kind of caught you off guard? Because certainly there was, I had expectations about this season based off of their real week one, which is actually week two. Why does college football do that? Does it do? Why do they do that? They confused you this morning when we were having our pre-show meeting.
Well, they try to tease you with that week zero,
which, you know, works in week zero, but then we get to week three, and I'm having to say, but it's actually week two or week four or whatever the hell. Like,
it's week three.
It's annoying to me.
We are done with week three.
All right, very good. So let us know, 615-737-1045, your comments on Facebook Live, Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch as well. When we come back, I'll tell you what the biggest surprise of the college football season over the first 3 weeks has been, why it happened on Saturday, why it happened in the SEC, and how it can work for the University of Tennessee's advantage. We'll talk about it and take your phone calls on the other side. I'm Buck Rising on this Tuesday. This is 104.5 The Zone. So you got to play this song on September the 21st, right?
Yeah, I just had to get it out of the way.
No, listen, if there are going to be moments when we're doing hacky sports talk radio, let this be the day.
Had to be done.
It's okay. It's happening, people. Welcome back. Buck Rising here with you until 1 o'clock. We're talking about the most surprising moments or your most surprising takeaways from 3 weeks now of college football. We're going to get into the SEC, the Auburn-Penn State game. My God, I can't say enough about, one, the job that the ESPN broadcast crew did, and then the environment. I've never been to a college football game that's not a Vanderbilt game. So let me say that first and foremost. So my opinion of college football environments, a bit skewed, I would say, respectfully. But
yeah, you shouldn't say that as much as you do.
What, respectfully?
No, that you haven't been to any college football game outside of a Vanderbilt game.
Well, I mean, we got to be honest. What, do you want me to lie?
No, it's not lying if you just don't say it.
You want me to lie and tell you that for 4 years at Indiana, I didn't just get drunk in the tailgate fields, pass out?
You didn't
out?
Go to one game as
Hell
a student.
No.
Not one?
For what?
I don't know. There had to be, like, who's Indiana's biggest football rival?
Purdue.
You didn't go to one Indiana-Purdue game?
No, because it's on Thanksgiving weekend. I'm not hanging out there Thanksgiving weekend. Get me out of there. I need free food. I needed to restock.
That's fair. I actually never went to a single I've never been to a Tennessee Vanderbilt game.
That's what I'm saying.
Because
that's,
it always fell on Thanksgiving
that's
weekend.
That's rivalry week. I said it correctly. That's a tough one. Rivalry week. I'm not going to test it. But yeah, I mean, listen, I worked Vandy games for the first couple of years down here, and I've never been to a college football game when I was actually in college. So what do I know about college football environments except what I see in Happy Valley, where it's just Holly Row surrounded by teeming masses of people all decked out in white and waving pom-poms. By the way, wait, Alabama does this, Tennessee does this, Penn State does this. What is threatening about the shaking of the pom-pom at the opponent? It's a cool visual.
Yeah, I think that's all it is. It's just just sort of the way it unifies the entire student section. It's a cool camera shot.
It's just some kind of kinetic energy to let them know that you're still there.
I think it definitely raises the level of energy.
I know. I mean, I'm just questioning why it is that it has that effect. There's nothing intimidating about the pom-pom on its face, but it's a very effective tactic in college football environments. It's lovely to be back in Nashville, though. Ron Slay has chimed in the chat on Zone TV. He says that I'm back in the building, and I'm not going to do it like Slay does it, because nobody does it.
No, nobody can do it.
Ron Slay does it, and he says, I was on my way to retrieve you if you weren't back today. He thought I might have gotten stuck in a dispensary or something like that in Washington. It's good to be back. So let's talk about the most surprising results for the college football weekend. 615-737-1045 is how you let us know your result. There's some interesting nominees in the chat on Zone TV as well. But I want to start with ours, if I can. So there's two for me, right? It's Ohio State's defense with Kerry Coombs, former Titans defensive back coach, at the helm. And I don't know how much longer that's going to last or if he's going to have involvement in play calling. It's them losing at home to Oregon in week two. And then in the SEC, man, Alabama, it just made the rest of the season so much more interesting. Because this is the question that we come in every year, right? With all of the losses that Alabama has, both on their coaching rehab assignments, where you've got Bill O'Brien and Doug Marrone, two former NFL head coaches. One's the offensive coordinator, the other one's the offensive line coach. They're just there to do a rehab stint and then get jettisoned back out into the coaching hiring cycle, the coaching carousel. So Alabama has these moments every year where they lose a great majority of their personnel because of the draft and because of the talent that they always have, and they replace it almost immediately. And there's You always wait for the drop-off with Alabama, and it so rarely happens, especially when you look at the week one, which is actually week two, and they open up against Miami, and Miami's a top 15 team. Now it looks to be that Miami is the greater fraud after we saw them struggle over the weekend in a couple of different in their games since playing Alabama. But for Bama, they looked pretty comfortable on offense to a point, and then things started to sputter. They had one touchdown in the final three quarters of the game, and they let Florida get back in that game. In fact, they're lucky to have beaten Florida. And if it had gone to overtime, if Dan Mullen had a better two-point conversion play dialed up, Alabama didn't want Florida in overtime.
Or if they had hit the extra point that they missed.
Right. I think that would have been a legitimate issue for Nick Saban and Bama in the SEC championship game from 2020 in the rematch down there in the swamp. But Nick Saban was asked about this because the defense is still problematic. Can I say that they're problematic if they're 2-0?
It's not that they're still problematic, is that they weren't problematic until the Florida game.
Well, and I'm talking about like body work from last year, because last year is probably the worst Nick Saban coached defense that I've ever seen. Right. And it wasn't just the Ole Miss. It was games after Ole Miss that they would continue just hemorrhage points and yards in a way that was clear and obvious, I thought, to everybody. And they're you know, the useful and not useful, but the legitimate excuse of COVID and all the effects that it had on defenses, you know, across college and the pros, with how poor the tackling was and how shoddy the defenses looked when they got out on the field last season. But I would say to you that for Nick Saban, his defense is a concern right now, because they're going to see some offenses, and Lucas is going to tell you why that may work to the benefit of Tennessee here in a couple of weeks. This was Nick Saban talking about that particular side of the ball.
What concerned me most was that we could not sustain our intensity, especially on defense. We had a lot of mental errors, and they did a good job. They did a really good job, had a good plan. And, you know, when you're playing the option, and, you know, everybody's got to be disciplined. Somebody's got the quarterback, somebody's got the pitch. And because we weren't doing that correctly, I think we were afraid to do a lot of other things that we had planned in the game. But we didn't get off the field on third down either. We had several opportunities, especially in the fourth quarter, to get off the field on third down where we created long yardage situations. When they went 99 yards for a touchdown, we got them backed up on the 1 yard line. We got them third down. We got to get off the field. Another situation where it was third and 18, they complete a pass for 16 yards to go for it on fourth down and convert. So, got to get off the field on third down. So all in all, it was just our execution on defense and the fact that we didn't get off the field on third down.
My God, did I just listen to a Nick Saban press conference or Shane Bowen and Mike Vrabel?
Right.
What? This is Alabama we're talking about. And it's been like this for a little while. Now, the game has changed. Nick Saban and Lane Kiffin, as the offensive coordinator out at Alabama a couple of years ago, like, they were in big part responsible for the way that we've seen not just Big 12 look and play offense and scheme offense the way that we're seeing across the board in college football. Nick Saban and Lane Kiffin were on the forefront of this, mainstreaming it. So while they are also doing that on the offensive side of the ball, less so against Florida's defense on Saturday, they are also having it done to them in a way that we're not accustomed to. Now, Lucas, I know that you were looking at this and you had a takeaway. Listen, Tennessee's probably going to lose at Florida. Tennessee is probably going to lose to Alabama. I don't think that's any great hot take. But there are the opportunities. You just want to see that they're vulnerable, and they looked vulnerable on Saturday. No,
you're talking about Alabama.
Yeah,
absolutely. And the thing is, Florida's best defense was its offense last Saturday. Alabama had three possessions in the second half.
They just bled them.
Florida ran the ball 43 times for 245 yards and four touchdowns. That's an average of 5.7 yards per carry. Their longest rush of the day was a 30-yarder. So they didn't bust any big plays to jack that up. They were consistently able to run the ball up the middle against this Alabama front. Chew up time. I mean, you're talking about a drive that started on the 1 yard line that ended in a touchdown in the second half. You don't see that against Nick Saban coach defenses. They were in a third and long, backed up, in their own territory and converted and went down the field and scored a touchdown.
Now, our resident Alabama fan has chimed in on YouTube. Tomahawk Chop says, are you serious, Buck? Alabama had the number one scoring defense in the SEC last year. You're better than that. Listen, you know it, and I know it. They were hemorrhaging yards last year. I'm not talking about scoring defense. I'm not talking about points. I know that matters more than giving up yards, as the Titans will tell you after Russell Wilson just went at their necks, or Russell Wilson and Tyler Lockett went at their necks for the better part of four quarters and then into overtime through the air. But that was something that has carried over from year to year. Dan Mullen, Alabama's defensive coordinator, and I wrote his name down because it's the first time that I've actually had to know the name of an Alabama defensive coordinator, because normally they just go out there and do their job. Pete Golden got schooled by Dan Mullen. And as Lucas rightly pointed out, you don't see that happen to the Crimson Tide very often. That's probably been the most shocking and honestly the best, because, I mean, I thought after the Miami game, God, they're just gonna crush everybody. Clemson looks terrible. DJ, there are legitimate reasons, and Dabo's at the press conferences, and I know that college football media, people like Paul Feinbaum have always been harsh on Dabo, and I've been harsh on Dabo, and I understand that he's giving legitimate explanations for why they're struggling. People are talking about Clemson winning the national championship this year. I've seen them perform now, just wildly underwhelming, and I looked at Alabama before that Florida game. I'm like, okay, they're literally, no pun intended, they're just going to roll. But now this opens the door for a lot more interesting opportunities for teams to take advantage of, because Alabama, for the first time in a long time, they look like they blinked a little bit. And Florida was able to take advantage of that and still find, I mean, they went up in the AP poll in a loss. People are seeing a lot of what is going not wrong there, because again, we're talking about an undefeated team yet again. They're still Alabama. He's still Nick Saban. They've still got all of the quarterbacks. Well, getting the quarterbacks is a new trend for them. They used to do this without the quarterbacks.
They're still the unquestioned favorite to win the national championship. But to Tomahawk's point, he's right. They were the number one scoring defense in the SEC last year, but both can be true, that they were the number one scoring defense in the SEC and that wasn't anywhere close to Nick Saban's standard of defense.
Right.
And we've played audio on this show of Nick Saban talking about the new era of, you know, what you used to do. You run the ball, you play defense, and you won games 17-13. That era doesn't exist anymore. So he's evolved with that, but and that speaks to what Nick Saban's done at Alabama, that wasn't even remotely close to his standard, and it was the best defense in the SEC.
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on. And listen, the standard for defense, Nick Saban's or otherwise, the standard for defense in college football has changed, right?
Yeah, and he understands that.
Right, but it still can't look like that. I mean, how many times Nick Saban did we keep a clicker count of how many times Nick Saban threw his headset?
It happened a few times
on Saturday.
Well, they just couldn't stop the run. I mean, they had Florida had three players over 50 yards. I mean, two players over 75 yards. It was they couldn't stop them up the middle all night.
615-737-1045. What's been the most surprising outcome of the college football season so far? Because I think there are a couple of different ways. We haven't even talked about Oklahoma, Nebraska. I thought that game was very, very interesting well, and has the opportunity to kind of shape the perception of what the season is going to end up being. Let's go to Casey in Lewisburg, who's called in. He wants to talk about 3 weeks of college football. What's up, Casey?
What's going on, my man? Yeah, y'all pretty much took what I was going to say with the Alabama situation. I'm a Gators fan, so it was good to see us actually being able to compete with a team like Alabama, because like you said, I think it actually showed that they're mortal. And that they can actually be beaten. So you're going to see a lot of teams actually come to play instead of coming in like, okay, we're going to just try to lose by a couple of touchdowns or something. They're going to actually come in with the mindset, hey, we can actually beat these guys. So, yeah, I'm going to be watching this out a bit close to see if they can come out undefeated.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Casey. 615-737-1045. I'm looking at this, and there was a couple of different ways. Because that Auburn game was so much fun. Well, I should say the Penn State game. Bo Nix looked bad. Lucas, I don't know how much you watched of that game. I know that was the primetime event on Saturday night. He's averaging 5 yards per pass attempt. That's awful. That's egregious, especially the way that they've gone out and listen, they had run the table to that point against inferior competition, but you expected a better performance from Auburn and from Bo Nix, who's been talked about as an interesting quarterback prospect for a couple of years now, and you're looking for him to kind of find his stride. He continues to give you these inconsistent performances, which I'm certain I'll remind Don Davenport of from time to time, given that she was crowing about beating Toledo by like 50.
Well, yeah, at this point, I think Bo Nix just kind of is who he is. And Auburn fans don't want to hear that. He was the five-star that came in as a true freshman and started that whole season, broke a bunch of freshman records. Just haven't seen the progression that Auburn fans would like out of him. By the way, Toledo stayed in it with Notre Dame to the death. So I don't know if that's such a bad thing to brag about.
Well, was it Toledo or Akron? I get them confused. Who did Auburn play in week?
Oh, Akron. Akron. Yeah, I don't think they've played Toledo.
That's my bad. 615-737.
Yeah, don't brag about a big win over Akron.
1045. What are the people in the Zone TV chat saying, Lucas? 615-737-1045 is how you get involved. In fact, I'll go to the Zone TV check while Lucas deals with the phone. Tomahawk says he's more worried about Bama's offense than the defense. Yeah, listen, I mean, after week one, we all thought that Bryce Young was going to be the odds-on Heisman favorite, and he has since been overtaken. Matt Corral, Ole Miss's offense, 60. And listen, Tulane had a remarkable, you know, moment, and all of the things that was being celebrated around Tulane, rightfully so, the way that Oklahoma paid tribute to them and having the green wave painted on the field after the latest hurricane issues down there in Louisiana. And it's been a great story, but 61-21?
Yeah, they almost went and beat Oklahoma in Norman.
My God. No, I know. That's what I'm saying. They're riding high. Listen, you can have, we've seen that kind of intangible energy carry over, and we'll spend some time on Oklahoma, Nebraska. I saw Will Compton celebrating moral victories on Saturday. And by the way, congratulations to him and his wife, Charo, because they are pregnant with a baby girl. So I told him already that I don't babysit. So we will avoid that. And then Dara, of course, volunteered us to babysit the future baby Compton. I heard it's Wilma Earl Compton, but I don't know that he's going to get away with that. 615-737-1045.
Yeah, that's a good takeaway, Matt Corral and Ole Miss. That's mine.
Odds on Heisman favorite.
He has completely taken charge of that race. I think it was really between him and Spencer Rattler, and there's no question who's leading the way there.
I mean, the talent is off the charts, and he's working with Lane Kiffin. Like, there's no better person to maximize the ability of that particular player, even in a conference like the SEC. Let's go to Phil, who's in Murfreesboro. He wants to weigh in on Bama in the college football season through 3 weeks. What's up, Phil?
Hey, Buck. How's it going?
It's going great, buddy.
First-time caller.
Great.
Love your show. Okay, here's my take on Alabama football. You catch them now because as the season goes on, they're only going to get better.
Sure.
The offensive line is brand new. The quarterback needs to learn he needs to run a little bit more than what he does. But just give him a little more time, and they're going to be a team to be reckoned with. And, yeah, if you're going to beat Alabama, you got to beat them early in the season.
Oh, no, listen, Phil, I'm not questioning that they're not to be reckoned with. Like, make no mistake. What Alabama is nearly invulnerable. We're talking about the tiniest of Achilles heel. This is something that it's the shooting star across the sky. It's the rare moment where Alabama looks like they may be able to take advantage of. Frankly, I thought it was going to be in week one, and then De'Aaron King in Miami. My God, Manny Diaz, get out of the sport. What is it with Miami and former Temple coaches? Because who was the guy? Was it Al Golden a couple of years ago?
Yes.
Al Golden with his damn ties?
Yes.
And then Manny D. It's way too long. Giant ties. He looked like a clown out there. And then, you know, coach like one too. But Manny Diaz was like the head coach at Temple for like 20 minutes. And then Miami came and scooped him up because he's a Miami guy. And now, you know, he's coaching like a Miami guy, or at least one in the last two decades.
Well, that call from Phil is why I think Ole Miss has the best shot to beat Alabama on this schedule. That game's in 2 weeks. Ole Miss has a week off, bye week, to prepare for that. Alabama takes on Southern Miss this weekend. But Ole Miss, it's in Tuscaloosa, which is why I'm hesitant to say that. Go back to that game. That game last year between those two was whoever has the ball last win.
It was so good.
And that's really where Alabama turned things around on. That was their come-to-Jesus moment on defense when they could not stop Lane Kiffin and Matt Corral. It's something about that Lane Kiffin-Nick Saban dynamic in a coaching battle. Even at Tennessee, a not very good Tennessee team in 2009, went down to Tuscaloosa and lost 12-10 on a blocked field goal against the national championship Alabama team. Something about that coaching battle.
Is that Terrence Cody?
That was Terrence Cody with the blocked field goal.
God.
They were a 43-yard field goal away from beating the number one team in the country in Tuscaloosa. I think Ole Miss has the best chance to beat Alabama with Matt Corral in 2 weeks.
I love that as a rivalry, too, because obviously, you know, that's why Tennessee fans wanted Hugh Freeze so badly. He beat Bama. Get him. 615-737-1045. What's the most surprising result of the college football season through 3 weeks? Let's go to Justin, who wants to talk about Woo Pig Suey. What's up, Justin?
Hey, what's up?
Not much, buddy. What you got for me?
So I think the biggest surprise has to be Arkansas, at least in the SEC. I mean, talking about a team who won two games for two straight years, bringing Sam Pittman, won four SEC games last year. They beat Texas this year, and they're ranked for the first time since 2016.
No, Sam Pittman deserves all the credit in the world. And I know Vols fans, like, I think just football fans have a special place in their heart for Sam Pittman, because Vols fans obviously love him for the time that he spent at the University of Tennessee. You know, the last time that I talked to Sam Pittman, we had him on the 615 Sessions podcast right after Isaiah. In fact, that podcast, it was Isaiah and then it was Sam Pittman, and it was Isaiah first. And we talked, and he was a great interview. This was like 2 days after he got drafted, and then Sam Pittman, and all Sam Pittman could do was glow about Isaiah Wilson. And then, you know, also Andrew Thomas, who looks terrible for the New York Giants. Bad year for Georgia tackles.
Not Pittman. Not a bad year for Pittman.
No, Pittman's
he's just
great.
A genuine coach.
He seems to really resonate with his kids.
Yeah, no question. I don't know that there's a better fit in college football right now.
And I love that they beat Texas.
Oh, they trounced Texas.
Texas fans have to hate just the rest of the college football world so badly. Welcome to the SEC. This Texas-Arkansas rivalry is going to be spicy, and then you go out and poop yourselves against an Arkansas team that's basically, you know, they're clearly hitting their stride.
A&M this weekend.
That's what I'm saying. It's a ranked matchup.
A&M needs to watch its back this weekend against the Razorbacks.
A&M is 7, and what is Arkansas, 16?
Yes.
Yes, that's going to be, I mean, this is, and listen, A&M, with the situation they've got at quarterback,
mm-hmm.
It's a legitimate possibility for an upset this weekend. And one of the two, what is it? There's just two ranked matchups this weekend, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, it's that and Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, Notre Dame.
Yes.
Yeah. Notre Dame, by the way, great showing for them on defense against Purdue, which, you know, I love to see Purdue lose because I hate Purdue. And Drew Brees on the call watching Purdue lose was delightful for me. It's a little bit of – didn't he block two that day, says D. Lee, talking about Terrence Cody?
Yes, he did.
He's a giant man. He's like 6'6", 340.
Yeah, he was.
Nose tackle.
Eli's new show on ESPN, you know, Peyton had Peyton's Places. Eli started doing Eli's Places to do college football locations. Peyton does the NFL. So I started watching it. I watched the Nick Saban episode, and Saban takes all of his freshmen out on the lake to go tubing.
Yeah.
Before the start of every season. And his whole thing is to, you know, flip him off the tube. He said Terrence Cody is the only Alabama player in the history of Saban's time at Alabama that he has not been able to basically launch off the tube driving the boat.
Yeah, because gravity and physics, you can't fight them.
Because of science, yeah.
Science. we got people. Apparently, there's a strong contingent of Purdue fans in the chat on YouTube that says, boiler the F up.
Interesting.
You are 0-2.
Okay.
I was not expecting that.
Yeah, me neither.
I thought I was safe here. No, they found me. Oh, goodness. All right, we'll come back, and we will talk about winners and losers of the football weekend. Now, not just in the box score, individual results, individual performances. Who won this weekend on the football field? Who lost this weekend on the football field? It may sound obvious, but we got some good nominees. You can win in a loss, and you can lose in a win. We'll tell you who did this weekend in the NFL and in college football. Coming up next, your phone calls as well. I'm Buck Rising. This is 104.5 The Zone. People are chiming in on the YouTube chat. D-Good says, you either get Dara a puppy, Dara being my girlfriend, or you babysit baby Wilma Earl Compton. I think we're gonna speak this into existence. Talking about Will Compton, he announced on social media yesterday that he's having a little girl. So that's very exciting for him and his new wife. And no, I will not be doing either of those things. That is where I draw the line in the sand. That is how I would very, very quickly lose my composure. I'm sure children are wonderful. I've been told that that they are a magical experience once they're yours. But it's a funny story. I'm traveling back from Seattle last night, and it's like a 7:30 Central Time flight back. And there's this couple, and the guy, you know, the guy listens. I don't know if he listens to the radio show or the primetime show or both or whatever. But like, he came up and he was talking to me. They went to the game. And he's got his little son with him, and he's saying, "Yeah, you know, little man, we go." This is the first year, obviously. He's under 1 year old, and he said, "Yeah, we try to go to a road game every year, and we've lost all the other ones, but he came with us to this one, and." The Titans won. So now he has, he's good luck. He has to come to all the games or all the next road games that we go to. And I'm thinking, you know, one, that's cool. I'm sure that's going to be a part of that kid's life for the rest of time. But I'm also thinking, my God, there are 68,000 people in that Seahawks stadium.
Poor child.
And it is rocking. You know what I'm saying? Like, I talked about it yesterday, I feel like a little bit, but like when I say that the press box shakes when the opponent is out there on offense against the Seahawks defense, I didn't even get it like full force, right? Because I'm sitting behind like thick press box glass inside like the press box section. And I'm still like feeling it and hearing it. I can't imagine what it's out there for a baby under 1 year old. You think they have one of those like giant like headsets on it?
I hope so.
Well, yeah, one would imagine. I don't know. And listen, far be it for me to judge anybody on their parenting abilities, because I know nothing about that. But speaking of which, let's do winners and losers of the football weekend. Lucas, do you want to start the bidding?
Yeah, my loser, we've already talked about it as far as the Titans-Seahawks game. My loser's officiating over the course of the weekend. Not even all the atrocities in the Titans-Seahawks game on both
really
sides.
Bad.
College football on Saturday, it was as bad as I can remember, and it was all SEC crews, the stuff that sticks out. Did you see the Memphis-Mississippi State ending?
No, I didn't, but I heard it was wild.
Mississippi State's punting the ball away. The ball kind of gets downed at the 10, and Mississippi State player touches it. Either way, the referee throws the marker and indicates to stop the clock and downs the football. The Memphis player comes in out of nowhere, scoops the ball up, starts taking off running. The refs let play go on. He runs it back. And they rule it a touchdown to make it 28-17 Memphis.
That's insane.
Now, there's been statements,
what?
And they've gone back.
I don't even think I understand that correctly. Are you kidding me?
The official downed the ball. He threw the marker, and he signaled with his arms to down the football. And they let him scoop it up and run it in front. Mississippi State players were all flat-footed. And in the end,
because what are you supposed to do?
Some of them ended up chasing him.
What?
It was far too late. But, at the end of it, they ruled it a touchdown, and Memphis got the win. And then in the Auburn-Penn State game, there were so many. There was a botched, non-intentional grounding call on Bo Nix. Obviously the most egregious was they just lost track of the downs.
Yeah.
Penn State had to punt on third down in that game.
No, I saw.
How does that happen?
Well, and nobody on either side said anything. I mean, I guess if you're Auburn, you're not saying anything. You're like, are they doing this? What's happening?
Yeah.
That's the only reason that anybody in the world, and it's really only me, that has any kind of disdain in my heart for Lee Corso, because he used to be the head coach of Indiana football and punt on third down. So that's the only reason that I harbor ill will for one of like college football's most beloved figures. But yeah, that's so, so bad. I mean, the NFL was tough, and I saw a lot of bad calls. And watching back the TV copies of a lot of the replay games, particularly the AFC South, but the Titans and the Seahawks, that crew sucked.
Officials took a lot of L's over the weekend. My winner of the weekend is Aaron Jones, whose father recently passed away. This was him after the game yesterday.
Game here at Lambeau without your dad. Just how much was he on your heart tonight?
He was really on my heart. I actually have a chain with a football, and his ashes are in it. I scored, and it fell off in the end zone, so I'll go look for it, but I know he's happy. He'd be happy. He was like, if you lose it anywhere, lose it in the end zone. So.
You didn't? You haven't found it?
I haven't. The grounds crew was looking for it, though. So.
Oh, we got to go get
that. We'll find it. We'll find it.
Just when did you know it was going to be your night?
What?
Aaron Jones, whose father recently passed away, had his father's ashes in a necklace, scored four touchdowns last night as the Packers beat the Lions. They did find the necklace. The grounds crew, the news broke today, they found the necklace with his father's ashes.
I was about to say, you just glossed over, like, the biggest
part. No, that's his biggest win of the weekend, is they ended up finding the necklace.
Yeah, but there was a moment when he lost his dad's ashes.
But he was happy about it. He said, if you wanted me to lose it anywhere, it would have been the end zone.
That's just insane to me. What?
They found it. But just great moment for Aaron Jones. Great night. Obviously emotional before the game. Had one of the games of his life.
Who is that sideline reporter? I would have lost
me. It was on Monday Night Football.
So that's, I'm blanking on her name. She's been doing it forever. She kills it. Not Pam Oliver. Pam Oliver's Fox.
Lisa Salters.
Lisa Salters. I'm sorry. Lisa Salters. I would have, like, that's why Lisa Salters is a pro and I'm not. I would have laughed out loud.
So Aaron Jones is my winner of the weekend.
Sure. Okay. We'll make this brief. Winners and losers of the football weekend. Man, as far as I'm concerned, nobody took a fatter L this weekend than Dolphins fans. Oh, my God. Jacoby Brissett lost more than anyone. And if you guys want to jump in and give your nominees, 615-737-1045 is how you do it. Who won the football weekend and who lost in great shame? The Dolphins, the result of that game, I thought that I had like a glitch on my ESPN app. Really, the losing teams in the AFC East, because the Jets looked wretched against the New England Patriots, and the Dolphins to get shut out. They lost by 5 damn touchdowns to a Bills team that did not look very good against the Steelers and found a way to just feast on that. I know Tua got hurt, but like all the... Because that's been a question, right? Why the Dolphins would be this interested in Deshaun Watson because they have Tua. And then you kind of pay attention to a little bit what's going on in Miami. They've had like 17 first-round picks on the offensive line. They still can't get it right. They look awful up front. The receivers drops all over the field, even though they've tried to upgrade that position for him. Jacoby Brissett, God love him. He went out there and he tried to dig himself out of that. There's no chance. There's no chance at all. And then as far as who won the football weekend, I think more than anybody, the way that I look at this is people who love running backs. Because the running back, not just Derrick Henry, not just Aaron Jones, but the running back has found its way back into a prominent position in the NFL. Speaking of AFC East football, Damian Harris, who had that wretched fumble against, was it the Dolphins in week one?
Yes.
Against the Dolphins in week one. He broke like eight tackles. Eight Jets defenders just shed off of Damian Harris, who had a fantastic performance. There was the running backs over the weekend were the stories, I think, almost more than the quarterbacking this week. Because I know there were some strong performances. I know Derek Carr had another big day. Tom Brady at 110 years old is leading the league in touchdown passes.
Get five.
Him and Gronk, he's you're just dousing Gronk in WD-40 and sending him out there to go and cave your skull in. God love. Well, yeah, Arthur Smith and Dean Pease not having it fun. Not having fun 0-2 down there in Atlanta. 615-737-1045. Boy, we haven't heard from Charlie and Franklin in a while. Let's go to Charlie and Franklin. What's up, Charlie?
How are you today?
I'm great, buddy.
I didn't understand the call. Kansas City was caught in the play was that the quarterback went into the end zone, and then he did take the ball out of the end zone, but he continued the play and then tried to throw the pass back in the end zone. Why wouldn't that be grounding? I can understand that the ball was past the goal line at one time, but then he continued to make a play, and why wouldn't that making the play make that play continue? You got an answer for me?
Yeah, Charlie, I wish I did, and I appreciate the call, 615-737-1045, because like we asked Mike Vrabel, this is like wiping the Julio Jones touchdown that wasn't a touchdown off the board and the safety that wasn't a safety that should have ended the Titans-Seahawks game. Like Mike's explanation was basically, yeah, there's a new head of officiating because Al Riveron retired pretty quietly this offseason, or right before the season. And so it seems like the officials are trying to kind of figure out what the precedent is now that there's new leadership in charge, which is terrible for the result on the field. But we'll continue this conversation. Luke Worsham of A to Z Sports, my fellow Titans writer, will join us and we'll pivot to a Titan-centric conversation. Your calls as well, Shane. will lead us off on the other side. I'm Buck Rising. This is 104.5 The Zone.